It's time for Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. And later on the show, we'll be talking with Karen Lynn Deal, who is music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, giving an overview of their new season, which starts next Friday in Bloomington and Springfield. Not tomorrow, but the following week. But first, a rather interesting project, to say the very least, by Deke Weaver, who is a writer and, I guess, performance artist, you could call him, an actor and professor at the University of Illinois. This is the second element in what is meant to be quite a long series of events called The Unreliable Bestiary. It's called Elephant, and it's taking place next weekend, the 23rd through the 27th of September, at, of all places, the Stock Pavilion on the campus of the University of Illinois Urbana. And it's free, besides. And Deke Weaver is with me on the show today to describe this unique event that is going to happen to us next week. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. And with that, we'll come away from the wonderful music of George Gershwin. It's his variations on I Got Rhythm, his own tune, of course. Earl Weill, the pianist with the Boston Pops Orchestra, conducted by Arthur Fiedler. That was recorded way back right around the time I was born, believe it or not, 1961. And that is going to be one of the pieces, one of the many pieces on the upcoming season of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra in Bloomington and Springfield. We will hear all of the details from Karen Lynn Deal, who is the music director of the orchestra, who's actually in her final year with the Illinois Symphony. So we'll hear some more music from that season and her overview coming up later here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Support for today's broadcast comes in part from the 2nd Annual Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival, September 23rd, 24th, and 25th, in and around downtown Urbana. The festival features over 70 artists performing blues, jazz, old-time, Cajun, bluegrass, and Irish music with storytelling and more. Schedules and information are at cufolkandroots.org. Starting on the same day, the 23rd, and running through the 27th of September, is a project called Elephant. It's part of the Unreliable Bestiary, which is a creation of Deke Weaver, who's a professor of in the School of Art and Design at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. And he's with me on the show today to do his best to describe what this project is all about. First of all, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
I ran into you, I don't know how long ago it was now, at some party or another where either you brought up the project or somebody else mentioned that you were doing this thing, and I kind of had a grasp on it, sort of, at the time, and I've since heard a little bit more about it and done some reading, and I would say I kind of have a grasp on it at this point. So first of all, why don't you talk about The Unreliable Bestiary as an overview?
All right. Well, The Unreliable Bestiary is a project I've come up with where I'm combining the ideas of the unreliable narrator and the old medieval bestiary. It's kind of making a performance for every letter of the alphabet, and each letter being represented by a particular endangered species. Kind of thinking of the whole project that'll probably last me till I'm dead, as almost being an arc of stories. And I'm sort of starting out with animals that we're all familiar with, sort of what they call charismatic megafauna. So the first project was a show I did at the Station Theater in Urbana called Monkey, and we opened that on Darwin's 200th birthday. And this one is Elephant. So you can go back to Curious George or Babar. It's just these animals that we have connections with as kids and end up in our fairy tales and our cartoons, just as a way to sort of kick off the whole big series. And
let me get a few before you sure. go on. Let me get a few definitions from you. First of all, for the did you say charismatic megafauna?
Yeah, that's what I've.
What does that mean?
This is something I've read in various behavioral texts. They're just basically the big furry animals that you can wrap your arms around, you know. So it might be like you might call a tiger part of this or a lion. They're not necessarily going to be, tiny voles or something like that or snakes or things that are not necessarily things you're going to be making stuffed animals out of.
Although I would challenge most people to wrap your arms around an elephant.
Well, yeah, it would be a challenge, but depending how old they are, I think, it's definitely something to try for.
Could be done. Okay, so the other two things that you mentioned initially, and you do mention in the very first sentence of your website in describing the unreliable bestiary, is this notion of the unreliable narrator and the medieval bestiary. What's the relevant application of the unreliable narrator in this case? First of all, what is an unreliable narrator normally, and then how does it figure in this concept?
Well, an unreliable narrator is an idea from literature and plays and movies where you're being told a story for an hour and a half, and then at the very end you realize that the narrator of the story is either crazy or lying or completely wrong. And what it does to you as a viewer is it completely changes your perspective on everything that you've seen so far, and everything, the world flips on its end. So I guess I was thinking about that in terms of this project with the idea that that we're assuming that we know where the Earth is going, where our habitats that we have on the planet are going, but we really don't. We don't know where it's going to be heading, and I think that was the impetus of it. And then combining that with the idea of the bestiary, where this is a illustrated text from the Middle Ages that were basically where every living thing, and sometimes even rocks and other non-living things, had a spiritual purpose. So everything was connected in this these often really elaborately illustrated texts.
So how does the notion of the unreliable narrator apply to you in this case? Because essentially, as the author of these projects, you're the narrator, and you show up in them besides.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what does that say about you?
Well, I think in a lot of ways I'm seeing myself sort of as a chronicler, or kind of treating these different shows almost as I think each performance is probably going to have a very different feeling. I'm trying to have each one set in a site that is specific to the creature. Some might be in a regular, ordinary theater, like at the station. But for the Stock Pavilion, we're talking about scale, so it's in a pretty big place, big, beautiful place. But in Thailand, elephants are classified as livestock, and working elephants in different parts of the world are definitely treated like cattle and horses. So I think for me, the unreliable narrator probably comes into focus just because there's so much information about all these different animals in myth, in just popular culture, but also in scientific texts and behavioral observations. But they're also in, just really old, almost spiritual texts and some of our very, very old stories. So kind of treating these almost like it's a quilt of stories or a quilt of ideas, and sort of stitching them together through these sort of multidisciplinary events.
About the elephant event itself, I was looked through your website, which, if people would like to explore it, is simply the Unreliable Bestiary or just Unreliable Bestiary?
Just unreliablebestiary.org.
.org. And you can check out some of these things yourself, but I was able to look at some of the videos you have in there, which are just excerpts from Monkey, which is the one you did at the station. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this one hasn't been done yet, so you can't really have much from there. But it looks like a combination of things where you stand and narrate, sort of, or at least talk in front of a screen, maybe, or you have dancers or people doing some kind of movement around you. There are lots of video excerpts, and there's a description here of a couple of 90-foot video screens where things are shown, and you have some music by Chris Peck that was written for this event, and I guess he did it also for Monkey. Is that right?
He didn't do it for Monkey.
He didn't do it.
But he, Chris and I and my partner Jennifer, we've worked together collaboratively on another piece called The Land of Plenty. And Chris and Jennifer has had a career as a dancer, choreographer, and she and Chris have worked on pieces together before. But yeah, I mean, I think basically you can think of these events as, I mean, whether there's video coming up or whether there's movement, dance happening, I think they're all basically telling a story in different ways. Sometimes they're pressing different sorts of buttons in your brain, but I really do see these things as storytelling, different forms of storytelling.
But it's not necessarily going to be a linear story with a plot that has a beginning, middle, and end, or even something that you can necessarily follow in a logical way, just however you might be experiencing what you as the author have chosen to put up there on the screen and in front of people.
It's true, but I definitely think there's a logic involved, and I think it certainly isn't deliberately confusing. It's there's definitely a flow and progress to the piece, and it's I mean, there's a lot of comparisons with theater for sure, and so I think it's probably in some ways you could think of it as a play that is kind of moved to a different site, and there's a couple of different threads that are going on in this piece. In terms of narrative, there's a story that my friend David Hayes, who teaches in the landscape architecture department, it was a story from his family, actually, where an elephant in 1916, a circus elephant up in South Dakota, was his keeper was treating him badly. The keeper was drunk, and the elephant went after him, and then they the entire town, and took a very long time to basically gun down this elephant. And there's a lot of strange stories like this throughout the states, of zoo elephants, circus elephants that have had very strange events of breaking loose or just sort of losing it. So that's a story. And then I went up to South Dakota, kind of interviewed some people in Elkton, South Dakota, where this happened, where it's still sort of still remembered, even though it was almost 100 years ago now. And then going to Thailand to go to a mahout training course. Mahouts were the keepers of the elephants in Southeast Asia, so there would be one mahout for their entire life of the elephant. Traditionally, there was a father and son in case the father died and the son could take over, but there's a really intense and complicated bond between the mahouts and their elephants.
An elephant can live quite a long time.
They'll live as long as we will. Yeah. Apparently they've found that a lot of the oldest elephants will die actually from starvation, because they've got 7 sets of teeth that they go through their whole lifetime, and then when their 7th set sort of wears down or runs out, they don't have any way to eat anymore. So, but the oldest ones will get up to their 70s, early 80s.
Wow, I didn't know that about elephants. Yeah. I've only thought of rows of teeth in the case of sharks, which is a whole more frightening
Well,
concept.
It's actually like a conveyor belt where they're kind of pushing forward. Hmm. And I'm sure somebody would be able to fully correct me on this, but this is what I've read. There's some amazing stuff that's going on, research about elephants over the last 25 years and things that are happening right now. Pretty incredible.
And a lot of it will show up at this event, I imagine, things you've learned in addition to the
story. Bits and pieces of it, yeah.
So a multimedia event is, that's a fair description, it sounds like.
Sure, yeah.
You've both on monkey, between monkey and elephant, you've collaborated with some of the same people. You mentioned Jennifer, who is Jennifer Allen, choreographer and co-director, and also she's involved in the thing. Val Olivero, actually, somebody I've met a few times at the Krannert Center and found out that she was involved with this as your stage manager. Susan Summers doing lighting, Andy Warfel, production design. And then Chris Peck, who we mentioned, you did bring along some music that he's written for this project. You want to talk about how that fits in?
Well, in a lot of different ways. Chris is a really interesting guy to work with. When he spent most of July here with us, and just to get things started, because we weren't quite sure where to begin with getting the sound musical stuff going, and he just started going to the blog of the Unreliable Bestiary, and he was grabbing things that I had put up from. A quote from Pliny the Elder, or some quote from a bit from the Journal of Acoustical. It's like the Acoustical Society of America journal that would have something about elephants in there, and then he would make songs from these things, and he's got his fingers in a lot of pots in terms of what he's interested in. And one of the things he's interested in is old children's folk songs. So some of the things feel almost chantish. Some have, there's a number of things that he's written as round. But he also has a very really interesting background in electronic music. And I think that's one of the interesting connections with this doing something at the Stock Pavilion is that in 1967, John Cage did a piece there called Music Circus that's still touring or still being performed around the world. A version of it was just performed in Brisbane, I think, in Australia. I feel like there's a lot of intersections that are happening in this piece that are pretty interesting, but... Chris he's been great. He's really, trying different instrumentation, trying different ideas about who would be singing these different parts. We've got a couple of women from Amasong that'll be singing with us. And,
So this is going to be performed live?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's try to do a little sampling of... some of what the music's in here.
That sounds great.
Which probably won't say a whole lot about the piece because I'm sure other things are going on while the music is happening in the performance.
So that's true.
We'll do our best since we are radio only and don't have multimedia available. We're talking with Deke Weaver, who is creator of Elephant, the second performance from his Unreliable Bestiary. It's going to happen at the University of Illinois Stock Pavilion. Thursday, the 23rd of September through Monday, the 27th, 8 p.m. each evening, and it is free. This is Live and Local.
For which reason, in the parching heat of summer, It is sought by the dragon with remarkable avidity. It lies therefore coiled up and concealed in the river in wait for the elephant to drink. It darts out, fastens itself around the trunk, and fixes itself behind the ear. That being the only place which the elephant cannot protect with the elephant's trunk. The blood of the elephant, it is said, is remarkably cold, for which reason in the parching heat of summer
entwined.
Montage of music by Chris Peck for the show Elephant by Deke Weaver with co-direction by Jennifer Allen, and that is going to be at the Stock Pavilion at the University of Illinois, the 23rd through the 27th of this month. It comes from Deke's Unreliable Bestiary, and Deke Weaver is with me on the show here on Live and Local, and we've just tried to do his best to give an idea of what this show might actually be like. I have one other question for you, Deke, before we move along to rather different music from the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. But as a professor of the School of Art and Design, how does this relate to this project? I mean, what do you do in the school, and where did you come up with this idea in the first place?
Well, I teach in the new media department of the School of Art and Design, so I teach a couple of levels of video. Is going back to my previous life as an animator, motion graphics designer, and I teach a performance class and a couple of levels of just open studio things. So I think it relates to the art and design students in a lot of ways, and there are actually quite a few students that are involved in this piece. There's a lot of folks working on this, and over the summer we had a number of students building clay models for, because there's a 6 or 7 minute claymation segment of the piece. So they were building clay elephants, clay ponies and horses, and we're kind of reenacting the thing that happened up in South Dakota with stop motion animation. There's also going to be a number of students in the show. So I think it's probably because there's a number of things that are visual art elements. There's a number of things that are video elements, which we're teaching there. And I think it's kind of the idea of interdisciplinarity, of just having these different media coming together in this event to shape this experience.
And you have a giant elephant puppet.
Yeah, it's made by Andy Warfel, who's Andy's done the environmental design on this piece, and as many people know, he's incredibly talented. And this is a piece that he took on, and it took him quite a while, but it's a beautiful thing. It's really a gorgeous piece that's nearly 12 feet high, and four of the dancers in the piece kind of are in the legs and kind of make it walk, and it's quite something. It's really nice.
And the Stock Pavilion is cleaned up for this event, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, that is something. If you have, there's going to be hay involved. There's people are going to be sitting on hay bales at one point in the piece. And but it's just such a gorgeous place. And the people, Dr. Doug Parrott in the Animal Sciences Department has been really, really helpful with helping us get in the space and kind of transform it for this couple of nights.
Well, it sounds like an interesting project, to say the very least. It's Elephant by Deke Weaver at the U of I Stock Pavilion, the 23rd through the 27th. For more information on the Unreliable Bestiary, go to unreliablebestiary.org, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's Bestiary, for those who aren't quite sure how to spell that.
And I should mention briefly, this is the first event in the Center for Advanced Studies Knowing Animals, 2010-2011 initiative. There's some really great speakers that are coming. James Elkins is coming down from Chicago. He's going to be doing a talk that afternoon, noon on the 27th, and he's also going to be doing a talk back session after Elephant, the night of the 27th, and Franz van der Waal is going to be speaking on October 12th as part of the initiative. So there's some really great stuff going on in this very interesting series that has been put together by Jane Desmond.
So you can go to the Center for Advanced Studies website at the University of Illinois.
Yep.
Deke, thanks very much.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our show is made possible with support from the Spurlock Museum Guild, presenting When in Rome, its annual auction and buffet dinner, Friday, September 24th at the I Hotel in Champaign. Preview at 5:30 with dinner at 6:30, followed by the auction. Items include unique jewelry, fine wines, and antiques. Proceeds support the museum's educational programs. Information is at 607-1370. On this portion of Live and Local, my guest is Karen Lindeal, who is the music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, which performs in Bloomington and Springfield. And there have a new season, which launches itself next Friday, the 24th. with concerts both that evening and the following. Sees a concert that's called Boldly Beautiful, an all Tchaikovsky program. First, Karen, thanks for joining us on the show.
My pleasure.
Do I remember hearing or reading that this might be your last season with the symphony?
Yes, it is. I just have this season, and then there'll be a new search for a new music director, and so probably next year will be the audition year with the different guest conductors coming in, and then possibly by the end of that season, they'll have a candidate to invite to be the new music director.
So did you have this milestone in mind when programming the current season?
Yes, actually I did, but I wanted to close with Mahler's first symphony, and we just weren't, you know, the economy has hit everybody so badly that we just weren't able to get the funds together to do it. So I think the Debussy and our last concert that we have planned will be a good send-off.
So in other words, that was Mahler's a bit too big of an orchestra right now.
It's a very expensive piece, yes.
You put Mahler on the program, and yeah, you better have the bucks. Well, let's kind of give, do you have any kind of overarching theme, either that's obvious or that maybe you had subliminally?
Well, I just worked this season more so than before with our new executive director, Trevor Orthman, and you know he came to the symphony last season, but the season had already been planned, and he is young and energetic and vivacious, and had a lot of that he could bring to the programming table in terms of artists that he had worked with before. So several of the artists that we're using this season are people that he's worked with before, and so he wanted, his overarching theme really was, I think, to mix it up a bit more and to have, you know, perhaps more shorter pieces in one regard, and to try to bring in younger audiences and bring in entertainers and artists that would inspire that. And I think we've got, we've done that this season. The Tchaikovsky concert will be very popular because it's Tchaikovsky, but also because we're actually ending with 1812. And often you'll hear that outdoors with cannons or any other form of boom that a person can find. But I think it'll be a big draw to be playing it inside. And he had worked with Sovin Kim, the violinist, before. And then the second concert that I'm really excited about is basically a tribute to Astor Piazzolla. And our bandoneon, which is a type of squeeze box, to use the old-fashioned word. He's worked with Lydia before and with Jason. And so I'm really excited that they're going to be playing, you know, the accordion and the guitar, and we'll have some really nice moments there with Piazzolla. And then I've bookended that concert with two classical pieces, the Ginastera Ballet Suite and the Stravinsky Firebird. So that concert, like some of the others, has many pieces on it instead of, you know, just an overture, a concerto, and a symphony.
And you mentioned the first names of the soloists, the bandoneon player Lydia Kaminska and the guitarist Jason Vio.
Right, right.
That should be wonderful.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Another thing we did, also because of the economy, but I think that I like the idea quite a bit, and suggested that instead of having a Valentine Pops like we had had before, that we actually make that February concert one that would appeal both to the classical audience and to the Pops audience, so that we could use that that February concert in both capacities. And I'm particularly excited about our concert with Jade Simmons. People might remember, I believe she won a Miss Illinois contest several years ago. She's absolutely beautiful and talented, and she's a classical pianist all the way. but we're going to kind of fashion that concert so that we have the symphonic dances from the West Side Story by Bernstein, and she'll play the classical Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini by Rachmaninoff, which is very popular. But then we'll also play the Gershwin I Got Rhythm variations and conclude with the Ravel Bolero. So it's a concert that would be great for pop's audiences to come to, but it's also great for our classical audiences to come to. And I really like the way we're packaging that. Then, of course, we're going to bring back Roberto Plano. He was one of the Van Cliburn winners that we had here, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. And he's going to come back and play the Brahms Piano Concerto with us. And as you know, Kevin, that piano concerto is like a symphony for piano and orchestra. It's huge, and I can't wait to see him again. And then I can't believe we actually were able to get Marietta Simpson, who was a world-renowned mezzo-soprano, to sing our final concert with us. I was very excited about that. And she's going to sing the Elgar Sea Pictures. And that concert is kind of my send-off concert, and it's about the planet and about paying attention to keeping the planet healthy and safe and for all the generations to come. So we've got lots of images there of the planet and of nature, including the Hovannis and God Created Great Whales, which is a really fun piece. It actually has humpback whale sounds on it. And then the big closer will be Debussy La Mer. So I'm very excited about the season. It looks really exciting and terrific young guest artists and a whole lot of talent.
Karen Lynn Deal is music director of the Illinois Symphony. I spoke with her earlier this morning about their upcoming season, which starts next week. Here's one of the pieces, or a portion of one of the pieces, that will be on the program that features Jade Simmons in Music of Gershwin and Paganini. This is, oh, I'm sorry, I'm mixing up the programs. This is the one with the Piazzolla double concerto, which also includes this music of Piazzolla called Oblivion. Beautiful music by Astor Piazzolla called Oblivion with Pablo Ziegler, the pianist, and the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra in Live and Local. And the Illinois Symphony will be playing that piece in their coming season. Let's continue with our conversation with Karen Deal, music director of the Illinois Symphony, about that season. You know, I was curious about something in looking at the new designation of your orchestras. It's always been the Illinois Symphony Orchestra and the Illinois Chamber Orchestra, and I was surprised when I looked on the website and I saw the Big Orchestra and the Little Orchestra. What's behind that?
That was one of Trevor's ideas. I think that the concept, I mean, the organization is still the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, but before we had Masterworks and Chamber Orchestra. That was the name of the two series, and he changed Masterworks to the Big Orchestra and the Chamber Orchestra to the Little Orchestra. And the thought behind that, I believe, was just to try to simplify things. And once again, the target is to appeal to younger audiences, people who perhaps have not been involved with any classical music before and wouldn't know the difference between, you know, a chamber orchestra and a full symphonic orchestra. And so, you know, these are all various things that that he wanted to try, and try to, you know, whenever you have a new person come in, they want to use their new ideas and try to work on branding the organization the way they feel would be good and profitable to it. So, like I said, this was the first time that he has been able to be involved in any of that because he came in after all of that was done last year.
So tell us what the Little Orchestra is doing.
Well, the Little Orchestra, the first concert is all Bach and Bach Brandenburgs. And you don't have time to do all of them, so we're doing 3, 4, and 5. But we've also got a couple of surprises on that because I'm going to add 2 rock pieces. The title of the concert is Bach Rocks, and I'm adding 2 surprise pop pieces for string orchestra that are actually rock and roll pieces, and I won't tell you what they are, but that's going to be a lot of fun, and people won't expect that. So hopefully if there are some new people in the audience, some new young people, they'll really like that. Then the Candlelight Concert is the one we traditionally have in December, early December, and it is always a nice compilation of beautiful music, generally beautiful Baroque music, along with a carol sing-along, and this one will be such as that as well, including the Pachelbel Canon. Our principal oboist is going to play a Telemann concerto, and we're going to play some lovely music for string quartet by Mannheim Steamroller. So I'm excited about that. And then the last two, the Cosmopolitan Classics, features a piece I've wanted to do here for quite some time and that the musicians have been wanting to play, and that is the Prokofiev Classical Symphony, his first symphony, which I'm pairing with Schubert's first symphony, and then a short symphony by Haydn. So that'll be a very classical, straight-up symphonic night.
Before you go on, Karen, to the April concert about the Classical Symphony, that's a piece that I've wanted to program for a long time with the Prairie Ensemble here, and I've always gotten a certain amount of resistance from especially the string players, said, oh, that's so hard.
Yeah, it is.
So who was requesting it, the strings or the winds?
The winds. I'm a flautist, as you know, and we have practiced the excerpts from the Prokofiev. It's a major excerpt on auditions, and the winds, particularly the flute, practice those excerpts over and over and over and over and over again. And so as a flute player, I wanted to program it because I've played it on the flute and auditioned for it so many times, but the flute section came and said, hey, we really want to do this. And so you'll please one group, and the other will be, saying, why do we have to practice so hard? Well, that's what we get paid for.
That's so. Right. So they get to take it out of the practice room and finally put it on stage.
That's right. Yeah. And I think it's very helpful, because if you have to go into auditions behind a screen and play, 30 seconds of music, and, there are excerpts from that symphony that string players as well as wind players have to play all the time at auditions. It's extremely important for that musician to have played the piece and those excerpts in context on the stage in the whole. And if you don't, then the odds are when you get behind that partition to play an audition, you won't play the excerpt in context, and the people on the other side, the judges, will know the entire work, and you might only know 30 seconds of it, and that can put you in bad form, for sure. It's very easy to tell who knows a piece versus who knows an excerpt.
Yeah, well, and it's a great audience piece, too, that's for sure.
Oh, fabulous, absolutely fabulous. The last concert is a string concert, and I've really put together 3 very beautiful pieces that probably none of which will be known. The Janacek Idyll for strings, the Miyakovsky 2 pieces for string orchestra, and the Bartok Divertimento for strings. So these are all, Eastern European composers, and all of these pieces will be new and fresh for the musicians and new and fresh for the audience as well, but each of them is extremely palatable, so to speak, and beautiful, and I think the audience will really enjoy that.
The Janacek especially has always been a piece I've loved, the Idol for Strings. Beautiful,
yeah.
Beautiful piece.
It's just beautiful. And the Bartok, you know, a lot of times we'll hear the music for strings, percussion, and celeste, which is played a lot more than this divertimento. But it's a lovely, lovely piece.
Yeah, and challenging for the strings also.
Yes, yes, all three of those are. So that'll be a good, you know, the chamber orchestra concerts or the little orchestra concerts really are a good opportunity for us to hone together the ensemble and the skills of the core string group. And, you know, that's what I like to do.
Well, it looks like a season that actually lives up to its billing. I noticed from the brochure it has the title of Expect the Unexpected. And it's a nice mix of things that you might expect and other things that you wouldn't. And a nice young-looking bunch of soloists, too,
yes,
just in case
yes.
That's important to me, to some people.
Young and diverse, which
yeah.
is, you know, the diversity is something that I've always aspired to and been very proud to have brought to Central Illinois. And the youthfulness. You know, they didn't look so young when I first got here. Now everybody looks young. So.
Well, I wish you the best of luck in your final season. I'm sure we'll be talking in advance of some of the other specific concerts as they come along. And have a great opening on the 24th. The 24th, next Friday.
24th, that's right.
Karen Lindeal, Music Director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, which does open its season on the 24th of Friday. With a concert called Boldly Beautiful. It's all Tchaikovsky, featuring violinist Sovin Kim. And have a great weekend as well.
Thank you so much.
This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYLL-FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. And we have support for today's programs from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Saturday from 2 to 6. Information is available at 337-7704 or at thecorkscrew.com. It's going to be a mostly cloudy afternoon with a slight chance of showers, high in the mid-70s. Tonight, partly cloudy with patchy fog after midnight and low in the upper 40s. Tomorrow, sunny, high in the upper 70s. We're at 72 right now, and it's coming up on 12:57. At 101, we have the Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor and classical music at 106. This has been Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. And we'll go out with music by Claude Debussy from the piece that Karen Deal said will be sort of her swan song with the Illinois Symphony next spring. And it's part of the second movement called Play of the Waves from La Mer, or The Sea, by Claude Debussy. The Montreal Symphony is led by Charles Dutoit here on FM 90.9.